lunch, right, guys? Living up where I'm at, funding anything that says Cuban, forget about it. So I'll take anything that has that word on it. I love Cuban food. I'm going to do a little, just a little brush up on that ninth step stuff, because the book says that these reparations take innumerable forms, and the book gives a lot of guidelines in different situations. And being sponsoring men, what I've found in this deal is I attract Larrys. Little Larrys come to me, and they're aggravating little sons of bitches, and they're harmful little sons of bitches. And typically, you know, guys that are in a committed situation, whether it's a marriage or a committed relationship, they've done some harm out there in the street, you know, doing stuff with a little Waffle House waitress. And they got all this guilt and remorse on them. And they want to go back to the wife and make an admission. You know, I slept with Ethel over. No. Because you're so guilty and so selfish, you want to take your guilt and your pain and dump it on your significant other? No. Well, what do? I said, you quit doing that. You don't do that no more. I've just seen it so many times. Somebody will come to me, and as a sponsor, the worst thing that I like to hear is, guess what I did? I used to sponsor a brain surgeon. He came into one of the treatment centers in Atlanta. He come pulling up in a Porsche. And I'm thinking, oh boy, this is going to be fun. He had the cosmopolitan cover wife and the three little kids. And he's literally a brain surgeon. And he called me up like three times. He said, guess what I did today? I said, okay. So, well, I bought a new Porsche. Called me again, and he said, guess what I did today? I bought a new Harley. Guess what I did today? I bought a Baskin-Robbins. And so finally, I went over to him, and I said, brother, I need to ask you something. Do you see a collar? I don't take confessions. You know, let's talk about what you're thinking about doing. And I got to tell you, it's about not living that way anymore. And there's so many different forms of reparation that we can take, and there's things that aren't mentioned in this book. I'm going to give you a little bit of my experience, and I do not recommend this. The people that I hurt probably the most, including myself, was my family. And I told you I grew up in the shadow of two self-made millionaires, and I'd made amends to everybody except my oldest brother's wife. And they don't live far from me. And they got the big pool. They live on the 14th green and blip, 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 blip. And my idea was, this is my great plan, I was going to see her at a family gathering, a funeral or a family or, you know, a reunion or whatever. And I was going to walk up and make the amends, and it was going to be accepted. And she was going to pat me on the back like my sister and say, oh, it wasn't that bad. Why don't you come over Sunday? We're going to have a pool party and a fried chicken dinner. 16 years passed, and my soul was rotting. I finally called my sponsor one day, and I said, Bill, I can't live another minute. I can't do another minute. He says, Larry, I've been suggesting you write the letter. I said, I don't want to write a damn letter. He said, write the letter. This is my experience. Sat there, and I wrote a couple of paragraphs, taking care of what I had done to create this division. I called my sponsor, and he said, read it to me. I read it to him. He said, good letter, mail it. Folded it up, put it in the envelope, addressed it, put a stamp on it, licked the envelope shut. I walked out of my front door to the mailbox. I opened the door to that mailbox, and I put that letter in. There's a lot of prayer that went with this. I shut the door, and when I pulled up that flag, I got free. And what I mean by that, I didn't get the damn call about a pool party or fried chicken. Didn't come. But I've seen her since. And what she thinks of me And how she accepted that is none of my business. I can tell you, I haven't been to their house. I haven't been to a pool party. And my brother is dying right now from cancer. And I'm not allowed in that house. Because I'm judged on things that, irregardless, I'm free. You see, they can come to my house. I'm good with that. But it's about me getting free. It's not about them. And, you know, we've just hurt so many people out there. Over on the top of page 83, it says, it gives us another time frame. There's a long period of reconstruction ahead. You know, I don't know about you. I've been around here a little over 26, and I still got some people that I can't find. I don't even know if they're still around. But if they pop up on my radar, they've got an amends coming. Because I want to be that free. And this discipline is laden with prayers. Every one of our steps has got direction, time frames, and prayers in it. And end of the first paragraph on 83, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The next paragraph starts out, it says, the spiritual life is not a theory. Italics. We have to live it. You know, I got a pretty... You didn't want to see me on drugs. I mean, I'm going to tell you, it was like a rat in a damn cage. I mean, as soon as I wake up, I'm like, I'm planning what's happening at noon, you know. And I called my sponsor one day and I said, Bob, he said, Larry, I want you to do something. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here a little bit, but talking about this prayer deal. He says, in the morning, when you realize, not when you're awake or after you pee, as soon as you realize you're still of this planet, that you're alive, before you open your eyes, say, good morning, God. What can I do for you today? I said, Bob, that's the corniest crap I've ever heard in my life. He said, it could be. Why don't you try? And I said, help me out here. Why would I do something that goofy? He said, well, Larry, he says, I know how your mind works. And he says, you got a better chance of not getting sideways if you can connect with God. He says, you may lose it between the bed and the toilet. He says, but you got a better chance of getting hooked up. So I started trying it. Does it work all the time? No, but I do it every morning. Because I need all the help I can get. This is a busy place up here, man. It's just steady. You know, hell, I have lost 5 business deals and gone into bankruptcy before I get a first cup of coffee. But, you know, when we're out there making those amends, and I'm going to wrap it up with this, it says, you know, in making these amends, we're sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. Chris alluded to the thing about being a shoe guy looking down. When I go out and make amends, I look the world in the eye. Here's your money. I'm sorry I hurt you. I'm sorry I shot your dog. Here's your money. Is this sufficient? Do I owe you some interest? I won't ever do this to you or anybody else again. Walking in and saying, here's your damn money. Now you got another amends to make, see? All the directions are right here. The book doesn't cover every situation. I've run into countless situations that aren't covered here. But it goes back to that fact. How free do you want to be? Get direction. When Chris was in Atlanta in October, I've got a situation hanging out there that's unresolved. And not many days go by that it doesn't chew on me. And he gave me clear-cut direction on how to do it. Because I need another perspective. So, I'm going to throw out a stupid opinion. In most of the meetings in our town, they read this document. It's called The Promises. And I can remember how confused I was at my early meetings. They would say, now Betty Lou's going to read The Promises. And they go, blah, 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 blah. You're going to be amazed before you're halfway through. And I'm sitting there yipping coffee halfway through with the meeting halfway through with this coffee? Halfway through with what? And they never talk about that. But those promises, if you can listen to them, if you can read them and break down exactly what they're saying, they're beautiful. They're beautiful promises. But the book is just jam-packed with incredible promises. And my original sponsor, Bill, told me, he says, Larry, if you take these steps, you can't stop them promises from coming true. That's my experience.
There's, can y'all hear me? There's, no, is it not on?
Hello, test.
Test, there it is. Sorry. Technical. You got to turn it on. I don't know. There's, when I was trying to get sober, y'all that heard a piece of my story last night, we were talking about early in the 80s when I was trying to get well in and out of the fellowship. What I understood the whole AA to B was the meetings. And what got explained to me years later when I ended up in the right room was that there's the fellowship and the program. And the program is the 12 steps, and as we work the 12 steps. Sometimes I talk about it, we beat the daylights out of the big book and about the program. But I don't want y'all to think that I'm not talking about the fellowship too. Because without y'all, we can't do this. And that's the part of the amends process for me, was understanding that I didn't have to do this by myself. I have the information. There's 8.5 pages in the book that discuss most of the amends that we're going to make. And so, there's some great stuff in here. But when I sit down, I'm going to ask all of y'all to consider, whether you're sober, 39 years or whether you're sober, you know, 6 months, 6 weeks, 6 days, whatever. Let's don't make any amend until you talk to at least one person about it. Run it off your home group member, your little homie down there, and we're eating some food after a meeting, and just run it by them, because our little heads can get so screwed up about these amends process, it's not even funny. And then, just like what Larry was saying, my attempt at relieving the pressure on me sometimes can make it much heavier on them. And I see it every day. And that's what we're talking about in the big book. I'm not going to make my load lighter by making your load heavier. This is sometimes we just gotta just put off the big boy britches and do what we gotta do. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. This idea that you've gotta go tell everybody. I had a guy the other day come in and make amends to me. And Chris says, I need to make amends to you. And I says, what? He says, listen, you know, I hated your guts when I first met you, and I know now that was wrong. And I'm thinking, you know, 5 minutes ago I thought you were a friend of mine and we didn't have a problem in the world. And now you can go screw yourself. You follow? It's just like, I had no idea that this was a problem, and now all of a sudden you're telling me it was been a problem. It's like, what made you think that I wasn't going to be affected by you saying that? Make sense? It's something to look at. Great old expression, it talks about when you kick at the universe, it kicks back. So basically with this amends process, in a nutshell, I'm not going to belabor it, but my amends process is trying to clean up the wreckage of my past. I'm with you that. But it's trying to get the universe straight. The little stupid amend I make over here by paying the money back that I owe that guy is going to affect me over here. My paycheck, finances. I mean, people that tithe know that all day long. The little amend that I make with that employer over here changes my job aspects over here. It's all the universe. Everybody thinks it's not. It's all connected. You may not be able to see it right off the bat, but the truth of the matter is, that's why let's get on these amends and let's get them done as quick as possible. We want to go make this big lofty. I'm going to pay all these people back. Sometimes you got to make the best you can. The book says make the best deal you can. Call the credit card company and find out what kind of deal they'll work for you. You'd be amazed at how many of them will say, yeah, listen, I understand that. We'll cut you some slack here. IRS did. The credit card companies will. A lot of these people. Nobody wants to jam us up. They're trying to help be supportive. You'd be amazed if you will ask for the deal. And that's perfectly okay. And if they say, okay, you can pay that back $20 a week until you get this $1 billion paid off. Thank you. And then you go without food before you miss that $20 payment. Again, this is a man of integrity here. I'm going to try to do what I say I'm going to do. That's what we do. And so you work the deal. You knock. Sometimes, guys, you got to sacrifice a little bit. It drives me crazy when I see the little guys that I'm sponsoring, some of the guys at my group, and they don't have enough money to put a dollar in a basket when it passes by. You'll follow? They don't have enough money to make their amends, but they're drinking a $4 energy drink. No, you're not going to do that. You know, we walk in with a $300 pair of tennis shoes. Excuse me? Who bought those shoes for you? Well, I did. So you don't have any money. You see, it's not your money if you owe it to somebody else. There's nothing spiritual about indebtedness, folks. It's a soapbox of mine. And I can't tell you how many people sitting in AA have never bothered to get a credit report. I know I owe everybody in the world. Do you? That's a lie. Because you don't owe everybody in the world. We're dealing with truths here. What is your truth? Get the credit report. Let's find out what you owe. You'd be amazed. Some of you are not near as bad off as you think you're going to be. It's part of making the amends. It's part about cleaning up around that universe. Does that make sense? I'm going to mention something because I'll forget it later. I had this guy in my home group. I actually walked in and caught him. He was making an amend to somebody, and I could see what he was doing. He had a little piece of paper, and he read this little script. If you're making an amend and you're reading a script, quit it. Come on, guys. Where's the genuineness to that? You know, my name is Chris Raymer, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to drink again if I don't make this amend. And I said, oh, I see. So you don't really want to pay me the $20 you owe me. What you want to do is one more time cover your ass. You follow? Quit it. What's wrong with just saying I was wrong? I made a mistake. I need to clean this up. How can I do that? What would you accept here? Does that make it's the sincerity? I mean, guys, the only thing worse making an amend is making it twice. You know, it takes all the courage in the world, but when you step on it and you screw it all up, you got to go back and make the amend again. You know, this is you're either going to act like a man of integrity or not. We take these little 4x5 index cards. I use the ruled ones because my writing has been clearly pointed out is.
Sucks.
And I write down. That's what we do. You can do a little notebook. You keep this information in there, and I want the name of the person and how much money you owe them. And my job as a sponsor, when I'm working with you, is to help you organize this 8-step list. Let's get the amend. Let me see. You owe the cable company and the cell phone company. Which one are we going to pay first? Cell phone company. Guys, I love the cable, but you could do without the cable. You can't do without a cell phone today with work and all this other nonsense and communication. So, I mean, I'm going to help you put this in order so that we make the right ones at the right time. It's just common sense. And then you can get these things knocked out. I've watched guys I've sponsored pay back hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you think I could never get that paid off. Guys, let me remind you, whose world are we living in now?
God.
Who's in charge? So don't tell me what you can do and can't do. Your job is to become willing to make the amend. And I guarantee you, God will show you how. I want to veer off for just a second here. Larry's fixing to talk about 10 and 11 here in a minute. But I got to talk about this thing called spiritual warfare. A lot of you guys in here, all of you in here, are going to experience this day in, day out hassle. I mean, I don't know why people want to avoid that conversation about it. First time you walk into a meeting and introduce yourself as a recovered alcoholic, like the book tells you on page 90 to introduce yourself to the new person as a man who is recovered, you'll follow? First time you do that, somebody's going to take a shot. You'll follow? See, makes me want to scream. The first time I was talking to a bunch of you this week, we're going to talk about sponsorship in the next hour. We're going to talk about that 12-step stuff in the next hour, working with other drunks. The first time you, as a 5-month, 4-month sober person, get out there and start sponsoring somebody, I guarantee you, you'll have somebody take a shot at you. You can't sponsor any. What? Who? Watch this. I mean, I've got to say it again. Thank God that they didn't talk about Ebby and Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. Thank God they didn't do that, you know? I mean, I can see Bill Wilson now. I'd like to help you, but I'm not sober a year yet. But I can come back and... That's asinine. You with us? Somebody else's opinion about what you can do that contradicts the big book, but that person can share his opinion anytime he wants to. I'm just saying, guys, because I've talked to some of you that are getting your head handed to you. Man, you come into a meeting and you're all excited. There's somebody going to take a shot at you. You'll follow? Be clear in the fact that there's a whole bunch of us on that spiritual path today. Whole bunch of us that are not going to take shots. They're going to be so grateful that you're in that trench with us. And I'm afraid I'd get out of here without saying that. It's going to be warfare for some of you. It's just the nature of the beast. We don't want to play that game. I got a guy that I worked with years ago. I was in a catering company, and I left town in the middle of the night like I do. I still to this day drive a pickup because you never know when you got to leave, you know. And oh my gosh. And this old boy, I finally came back to the hill country, and I had to make amends to him. And I came into his office. This is one of those amends that didn't go well. Y'all follow? It wasn't like what he's talking about. Oh, you were a good, you know, you were sick. We understand that. He said, you know, that's fine. He was really quiet. And I said, is there anything I can do to make this up? And he said, yep, you can get the hell out of my office. And listen, I live in Ingram, Texas. I mean, this is a small little town. You're going to run into these people, right? And I said, well, I did the best I could do. I walked out and I took the little sheet and I tore it up and I said, I gave it the best shot I could. And about 6 months later, this guy calls me on the phone. I recognize his voice. And he says, are you still in that A&A thing? I said, yeah, you're still going to those classes? He goes, I said, yeah. Yeah. He says, do you remember my son? He had two sons, and I drank with them both. And I said, yeah, I sure do. I says, he's having a whole bunch of trouble. Do you think maybe you could talk to him? Mm. You see, I didn't go make amends to this guy so that he would refer me to his son 6 months later. I went to make amends because that's what I was supposed to do to clean up my side of the street. He didn't want to clean up his side of the street. But because I did, 6 months later, you with us? I got the phone and I got to call this guy and got to help him get on the path. And how does that happen? Again, in God's world, you don't know what's going to happen. Our only job is to do what we're supposed to do right in front of us. We clean this mess up. And if you will follow the instructions and talk to some people about it, I guarantee you we got enough knowledge in this room right here to cover any amend that you might come across. And that's the absolute best. You want to do 10-11?
I do. I want to jump on your little gravy train of that recovered thing for a minute. Y'all hear me?
Yes, Larry.
Earth to Jim. You know, the word recovered is in our book 30-some-odd times. The word recovering is in a footnote in the chapter to Wives, first page. The word recovering is in the first sentence in the family afterwards. Twice. If all you had promised me when I came here was that I was going to be recovering, I don't know that I would have stayed. You know, I don't go... We do a prayer group. We're going to talk about that over in 11, but we do a prayer group every Thursday night at 7:30 at my home group. A group of people get together, we hold hands, and we pray. I have never yet walked into that room and held these people's hands and prayed in hope. That's like going to buy a damn lottery ticket. I hold their hands and I pray in absolute faith that the God of my understanding is hearing me. He knows my needs. So I didn't walk in here to get to start recovering. I came in here to get recovered so I could go on with my life. And we take some shots at the fellowship. And hopefully you'll be able to hear this in a positive light. I'm not here to beat the fellowship up. I'm one of you. But the fellowship in our town tells us that 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. Why the hell would I want to get this 10 and then just level off? Step 10, 11, and 12 are growth steps. I want to continue to grow. In the middle of page 84, it says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue. If you got your book and a pen, you're going to, and if you haven't been through this, you're going to want to write this. says we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. And here's a cool word. We vigorously commence this way of living when? While we were making nice step amends, as we cleaned up the past.
Yes.
There's your time frame. And then it says, we have entered the world of the Spirit. How many people are going to stay in this room for the rest of your life? Always, no, you're not. You're going to stay in here all the rest of your life. We're going to have to bring you sandwiches? No, you're going to leave in a minute. We all entered this room, but we're going to leave. We entered the world of the Spirit, but we're human beings with that self-will deal, and we're going to drift out of it. We've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function isn't to maintain, is to grow in what? Understanding and effectiveness. What can I do for you today? Your time frame. This is not an overnight matter. What's the next time frame? It should continue for your lifetime.
Oh.
Continue, here's step four, to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Four, when, not if, these crop up, you pray. You ask God to remove them at once. Step six and seven. Step five, we discuss them with someone immediately. Not tomorrow or next week. Immediately. Step five, and then make amends quickly, eight and nine, if we've harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Step 12, love and tolerance of others is our code. When you read that step on that wall there, that's not what you see, is it? It's just so full. And, you know, the guys that have guided me on my path, they've got me living here. This is where I live. I was recently, I had one of these bad trips, you know, 27 hours to Canada. And when I got to the hotel, I was not real social. Snowpack. And I walked in and the little gal behind the desk was having a rough time of it. She was probably new. And I wasn't the kindest to her.
Mm-hmm.
I got to my room and guess what was happening? Larry's soul had begun to rot from the inside out. And I had to go back to that lobby and set right any harm I had created. Doesn't make me a good guy. I want to be free. I had to be there for 5 days and see this little girl. Wasn't her fault. I got to do that. Not for her, it's for me. Because she said, oh, I'm sorry that I said, no, you didn't do anything. It's my perception, you know. I want what I want, and I want it right now. Here's a promise, and we have ceased. And these are my favorite promises in the book.
Amen.
And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Here's the promise. For by this time, sanity will have returned. Greater aspect of my disease is I'm insane. I'm nuttier than a fruitcake. This time it'll be different. It says, here's a promise, we will seldom be interested in liquor, and if tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely, there's that mental twist again, and normally. I still don't know what that means. And we will find that this has happened automatically. And the thing I love about Bill Wilson and his writing style, Bill is bumped up against a topic here that he can't explain to you. And six times before the end of this paragraph, he's going to say the same thing. He says, fine, this has happened automatically. We'll see our new attitude toward liquor has been given us with any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. He said, I'm trying to tell you something, but I don't know exactly how to put it. You know, it's just not there. It's like you wake up one day and you're not thirsty. You know, she leaves and you're not thirsty. We react sanely and normally. It says, we're neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. And if you've not had this experience, it's going to be impossible to explain it to somebody. But something has happened. God showed up back there between 2 and 7, and all of a sudden we're going, what is this? what is this? And then here's the end of the promise. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Mm. It's so cool the way that they line these steps up because they're integral. They're like pieces of a puzzle. This one is fixing to roll you right on over into a whole bunch of praying and connecting and growing the spiritual experience that you got. It's easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. A laurel is a past achievement. My friend Chris said earlier today or last night, I can't stay sober on a third step decision I made 26 years ago. I can't stay sober on a 10th step I did 15 years ago. A past achievement. I got to continue to do this. I got to be in this game. I don't fit AA into my life. I fit my life into AA. Because without you, I'm dead. Without you, I'm out of, God's gone. God's not in the picture. Because he never does come and sit down by my bed and say, hey, Larry, I got to, you know, he talks to me through you guys. So, another promise, we're headed for trouble if we do because alcohol is a subtle flow. You know, let's all go out and have a joint on the next break. It's okay. We're going to function. It's okay. We're not cured of alcoholism. And I get this all the time. My tag on my car says recovered. On a regular basis, I get these little yahoos that get a Waffle House napkin and they'll put down, they'll write this paragraph and put it on my windshield. I'm thinking, read the damn book. You know, we're not cured of alcohol. What we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Here's another time frame. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. 10th step prayer. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us, time frame, constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. For the forwards and the preface and 85 pages, they took our will away and they just gave it back. They don't give you any power. You ever hear these little cats come, I fired my sponsor. Really? I'm going to fire my sponsor. Boy, where'd you get that power? Really? I had a sponsor one time say, if you don't call me every day, I'm going to fire you by default. We are about to bust into step 11 here, and I believe I'm going to invite Mr. Chris in to share some of this 10th step stuff.
I agree. The 10-step promises are the things that'll get your attention. Those promises are absolutely spectacular. And again, you don't hear a lot of that in the meeting. So my sponsor used to say a long time ago, he says, how do you know what you don't know? You know, a lot of people don't have the experience with this. I remember watching Oprah one time, and I've talked about this from podiums. I'd love to find this little girl and hug her so I could kind of talk to her a little bit. But Oprah had been talking She was a little drug addict in another fellowship, and she was staying sober. She had 4 years, and Oprah, you know how she does. She reaches over, and she's got Kleenex, you know. She's, oh, it must just be the hardest thing not using, you know. And she says, oh, it's the toughest, you know. It's, some days are so hard. She's 4 years sober, right? We got millions of people watching, and this girl's painting this picture that this is a struggle. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. That's not my experience. You've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. The obsession goes away, and you cease fighting anything or anyone. All that goes away. And so some of y'all are sitting in here, you're sober for a bunch of years, and you still have moments where you really want to use really hard. There's a reason for that. Probably if we'll look at some area of our program, some maybe dishonesty that we're doing, something of that nature, we can look and see what's causing that. If you're on the plane where you're supposed to be, guys, I haven't wanted to drink in 26 years. I mean, I've wanted to die. Y'all understand? I've had some times in a stupid divorce with a little stepson involved. I was not a happy camper. But not once did the obsession to use come back and use. And so in treatment centers, we paint it, you know, every day's a day. You know, you might be triggered and you might drink. And that's not what my big book says. And again, I got to say, what kind of a crappy program do we have that only works? You hold your mouth crooked and you get loaded. And it's just, it's nuts. The 10-step stuff is stuff. I got a guy in my sponsorship lineage was a guy named Paul M. He was out of Riverside, Chicago. He wrote extensively for the Grapevine back in the day when Grapevine published a lot of articles about big book thumpers back in the day. And I had a little computer guy that got all of his Grapevine articles on one attachment. If you email me, I'll send them to you. But one of the things that he says in his articles, most of these articles were written in the 70s and 80s. One of the things he talks about are the 10th and 11th step is the forgotten steps. You know, we have this great, we focused on lots of other stuff, but it's the daily maintenance things that we are supposed to be doing, exactly what Larry said, the growth steps that we fail to look at. Next year, when we come back to visit with you, I don't want to be the same person. I want to be better. I want to be more connected. I want to be happier. Would y'all accept that?
Happier?
I don't know. I want to squeeze more out of life than I'm getting now, I guarantee you. And that's what those 10th step, 11th step stuff's about. I've told this story before real quick. Last year I was coming through the airport those in San Antonio airports, all those little TSA guys I know, I mean, they're my brothers because I see them. I'm in the airport, hell, a couple times a week. And I'm going through this deal like this, and I wear this little cheap Timex because I don't have to take it off, you know, in the airports. It's anything to speed the process. And this guy said something about my watch, and he used the wrong, I know this is hard to understand. He used the wrong tone with me. God, I know. I hate to even admit it. And he got a little quick with me, and I got a little quicker with him, you know. And I get through and I get my stuff, you know, and I, you know, get my, you know, I'm walking on down with my shoes and I'm walking on down to my gate, and my phone rings, and it's one of the little guys I'm sponsoring. I'm talking to. I says, man, you don't believe this guy. You know what I mean? He sees me. How come he talked to me that way? I mean, it's just like he didn't. And this guy's just crickets. He said, I think maybe there's a little 10th step involved in this. I looked at that boy and I said, and I think you need to find a new sponsor. This guy a few years sober telling me, I'm 25 years sober. I don't need some young puke telling me that I need to go do it. Beep, hung up on his little butt. And I took about 10 more steps, and I stopped, and I sat down in a chair, and I put my shoes back on. You with me? And I got myself collected, and I walked right straight back to that TSA. He saw me coming, little one-eyed guy coming up, you know, and he, no. I said, buddy, I said, no, give me 10 seconds. And I apologized. I had no right to treat you that way. Come on, guys. These guys are busting their butt up there. The last thing they need is some... Who am I to talk to anybody that way? Who died and left me king of the universe? I'm no better than him. I'm no worse than him. He's my brother. And I talked to him like he was like a slave. I apologized. Buddy, I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. And he was taken aback. He's like, oh my gosh, you know, absolutely. And And I turned around and I walked back to my gate. And the walk back to my gate was completely different than the first walk to that gate. I was one more time, I was free. I didn't have to carry that stuff around. We can justify so much stuff. You with me? Guys, not once in 26 years have I ever intentionally stepped on somebody. I don't have it in me. But I do it all the time. I do it with my home group members. I do it with my wife. I do it with my people, my coworkers. Clean it up. Thank God Bill Wilson put that step in there. Meditation, guys, I'll hit my lick and then let Larry finish this out. Guys, the book means what it says and says what it means. I'm spending some time with God. My sponsor used to ask me, he says, Chris, what's the most important thing in your life? And I said, God. He said, great. How much time did you spend with him this morning? That was a cheap shot, buddy. Thank you for sharing, but that was a cheap shot, you know? I rest my case. It takes discipline. That's why they call it the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. It takes practice to do. But once you begin this meditation process, once you get quiet with God, you will crave that alone time with that power. That's just been my experience. Larry?
How much time do we have?
We have 10, 15, about 15 minutes.
Well, I'm probably going to break this one in half, this 11th step, because there's a lot of meat in here because he just opened the door. It's the most important thing we can do, so we're not going to just give it 15 minutes. But the book says at the bottom of page 85, I'm a big book thumper, guys, and I've got a lot of experience with this stuff, but the truth comes out of here. It says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction. Before I go any further, I have a document that I can send you somewhere along the way. Somebody has taken all the 10th step prayers and put them into a 10th and 11th step prayers and put them into a format. It's a prayer, and it's beautiful. They all just flow together because there's like nine prayers in this from here to the end of the chapter. It says strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, I'm going to throw my little buddy here that made this beautiful candy under the bus. Here's what she said to me. By the way, if you want a brand new addiction, come up and grab a piece of this. We'll all go to jail together. She came to me and she says, would you like this? And I said, what is it? She says, it's candy, but it's not good because I left out the nuts. I don't miss the nuts. I didn't know they were supposed to be there. This is dope right here. But see, in her mind, this is broken because she didn't carefully follow directions. You can't, if I'm going to make chocolate chip cookies and I put in all the stuff and all of a sudden I look and I've got no chocolate chip pieces, I got vanilla cookies. In here, you got to carefully follow directions or you're going to have what? Half what? Measures. And what does half measures give us? Not half? Vanilla cookies. We have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, and don't put a big feather in your cap, to some extent, we've become God conscious. We start growing this little consciousness, this little conscience that I can't steal these mints I got because people are buying cash three. You know, I can't do that. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. Vital means life-sustaining. Sixth sense is, we're going to talk about it in a page and a half, but we begin to sense what the next thought or action is to be. It says, but we must go further, and that means more action. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Most uncomfortable thing I've done in my life, I was raised Baptist. And you guys, right out of the gate, you suggested strongly that I pray on my knees. Well, Baptists don't pray on their knees. And so what I've done is I've hooked up with you and I've talked to you because you seem like you're connected to something. And I want to know what that path is about. Yes. And the book says, better men than us are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. The entire program of Alcoholics Anonymous deals with three attitudes. That's it. My attitude about myself, I'm not really a piece of dirt. And my attitude about you, you're really not out to get me. And my attitude about God. That's all there is here, kids. Me, you, and God. Me, you, and God. And my perception or attitude about those three things. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague on this matter. Here it is. Yet we, the fellowship, believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Basically what they're saying is develop your own prayer life. So I came out of that Baptist church with all the stuff that I had, misinformation that I had put into my consciousness, and I started poking my head in the Episcopal church and the Unity church and metaphysical. I started poking around, looking at different things to find something that worked for me. And where I'm at today, I'm good. But there was a period in my life in this new path that it was God as I don't understand Him. Today I'm good because I was... We were talking at dinner last night that Jehovah's Witnesses used to come and knock on my door back when, in the day, and I'm lit up. I tell you how to get rid of them. Go to the door naked. They do not want to come in. My old partner, Charlie, he used to tell a story. He said he was sitting in the house. He had a pot of coffee going, and Jehovah's Witness knocked on the door, and he went over, and he said, "Hey, how you doing?" He says, "My name's Jim. I want to talk to you about the Watchtower." He says, "You want a cup of coffee, Jim?" He says, "I do." He said, "Come on in, Hoss." Jim came in and sat down. Charlie went and got him a cup of coffee and sat down. He said, "Well, Jim, what do you want to talk about?" He says, "I don't know. I ain't never got this far." But, you know, the little Mormons came by, the little Mormon guys on the bicycle, those thin ties, and we sat and we talked. And they came by and visited through, because I was interested in what they had to say. They weren't there to harm me or to, they weren't a cult. They were practicing those principles in all their affairs, see? Mm-hmm. And so I took some definite and valuable suggestions from you. I went to your places of worship and followed the things that had worked for you. And I would sidle up to people that seemed to be happy and successful and had a joy about them. And you get that through that tenth step, and then you develop a greater relationship with this power, because without that power, I'm dead. And you do that through prayer and meditation. And, you know, the fellowship, again, will tell you, people come to me all the time and say, "Yep, I write a 10 at 10. What?
I write a 7 at 10.
Yeah. I hate to tell you, but 10 ain't a nighttime step. 10's a walking around step.
Come on.
Have we talked about any? I read verbatim out of the book. It didn't say a damn thing about night, did it? Here we go, top page 86. When we retire at night, we constructively, not destructively, review our day. Here we go with that step work again. Where we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, pretty much? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack in the stream of life? Warning, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that promise would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we pray. We ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. On awakening. Now we're in 11. Y'all agree with me here? On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours a day ahead. You pray. You ask God to direct your thinking, especially to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Guys, this thing of prayer, you know, it was real tough for me. And we were doing a workshop about this size one time somewhere, and there's this great big biker in the back, and we were talking about this prayer thing. And he raised his hand and he said, "How do you do that?" You do it. If you tell me that it works for you, and this is the way you do it, who's to say it won't work for me? I got to try it. You know, it doesn't have to be comfortable. This ain't about being comfortable, and I ain't got to agree with what you think you're telling me. But I got to try it. I got to try it. Because I want to be free, man. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. After all, God gave us brains to use. Here's a promise. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And thinking about our day, we may face indecision. That happens to me on a regular basis. I mean, like I told you, by 10 o'clock, I've already been through bankruptcy and met that girl and divorced her. You know? We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we pray again. Remember, this is about prayer. There's like 7 prayers in this step. Here we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. I was, you know, this is the tough one. I've been looking for some guidance in a situation I'm on, and I was talking to Chris a couple of weeks ago, and I said, "Buddy, I've hit a brick wall with this." He says, "What's God got to say about it?" And he says, "Why don't you pray about that?" And I prayed about it, and it wasn't, 30 minutes. 30 minutes. The answer, not an idea. The answer was there, and I called him up. I said, "Brother, you're not going to believe this." I mean, the answer sits where this man's sitting every Thursday night from me. But I got to be open. I got to be awake to that answer. You know, if I'm bobbing up and down and I can't swim, and somebody throws me a rope, I better damn grab it. That rope isn't there to catch fish; it's for me to save my life. I got to be awake to that survival technique. And we relax and take it easy. There again is Larry Scott's difficulty. I don't know how to do that. I'm a get her done kind of guy. You know, the pig's in the ditch. Let's get him out. I sit and relax and wait, really? It's like, let's do something. You know? We don't struggle. We're often surprised how the right answers will come after we've tried this for a while. Here's the sixth sense. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. There's your vital sixth sense. Being still inexperienced, I'm going to wrap this up with a couple of things and then I'm going to drift off to the bathroom. It says, being still inexperienced, which was my truth, and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable, this is a promise, that we're going to be inspired at all times. You know, remember I talked about that obsession of chrome? It is not God's will that I go buy that big old piece of chrome on the wall at the Harley store. But God wanted me to have it. No. No. No, you little selfish prick. You wanted it. We might pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on a plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. Once again, when I pray, I don't pray in hope. I don't pray in hope. I pray in a spirit of enthusiasm, excitement, and expectancy. You know, it's the same thing as buying a lottery ticket, guys. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer. Here it is. That we be shown all throughout the day what our next step is to be. That we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. Here's the kicker. We ask especially from freedom from self-will. We are careful to make no request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We're careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. I go to work with these little guys that are coming in off the street and they're in these sober houses and they've got these little kids and they got that wife that don't want nothing to do with them and they're working in a car wash for tips. And I size them up. I said, "Do you have a car? No. Do you have a license? No. But I'm about to get my license back. Ask God to help you with that." Really? Yeah. Because see, once you get back in the mainstream of life, you can support that child. You can give that child some. You can go get your own place. You can buy groceries. You're back in the mainstream of life. And the story I'm going to share with you, and then I'm out. When we did that book study for the men at the Moore Men's Center in Atlanta, there used to be a guy named Paul. And Paul sat right here on the front row, and he always carried his little pigeons in there with him, and he had these old black horn-rimmed glasses, shaved head and inked up, busted out teeth. He looked like an Aryan Nation guy, but he wasn't. I mean, this guy was a big book thumping Nazi. And he sat on the front row, and I sponsored Paul. Paul came up to me one night, and he said, "Larry, it's about time for me to get my driving privilege back." I said, "Okay." He said, "My driver's license has been suspended in 7 Georgia counties. I've paid my debt. I've been riding that bicycle back and forth from my daddy's house." I get emotional when I tell this because this happened. I saw this happen. He said, I've been riding that bicycle, rain, shine, sleet, or snow, to Publix, stocking the shelves at the grocery store every day. I've paid my way. And I said, well, Paul, what's it going to take to get that driver's license back? He says, oh, it's not going to be good. He said, I got to go to these DUI classes. And that costs a lot of money. I said, okay. He said, I got to go get the interlock device so that my car will start. That's going to be a lot of money. I said, yeah. He said, I got these fines in 7 counties, and they're pretty heavy. I said, okay. I said, Paul, you've been riding that bicycle. Do you have the money for all this stuff? He says, yes, sir. I said, before you go and buy all this stuff and pay all these fees, humor me. Go down to the driver's license place, to the DMV, and talk to them people and ask them where you're at with the state of Georgia. He says, no, man. I said, Paul, humor me. He got his little pigeon to drive him down to the DMV. It was 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, government ready to get off work. Paul walks up to that big old 4-inch thick plexiglass window, and woman says, yes, sir, can I help you? He says, yes, ma'am. My name's Paul Hill. Would you look me up in your computer and tell me where I stand with the state of Georgia? Paul Hill, you live on this street in Marietta, Georgia? Yes, ma'am. She said, that'll be $37. My hand to God. He says, no, that can't be. She said, yes, sir. He said, ma'am, it's Paul Hill. I live on this street at this address. It's my daddy's house. She goes, Mr. Hill, it's $37. He said, no, can't be. He said, hang on a minute. He walks over across the hall and he says, Larry? I said, hey, Paul. He says, this woman's trying to collect $37 and give me my license. I said, take the license. He said, but. I said, no, Paul. You have fallen through bureaucratic red tape. See, this is God. God moves in all sorts of weird ways. Because when you hear the end of the story, you're going to get it. I said, Paul, take the license. Paul is a knucklehead, man. He goes back over and he says, ma'am, I'm sorry, just one more time. Paul Hill on this street. And she takes the computer monitor and turns around. She says, is that you? So she slid them licenses under that little drawer for $37. And in Georgia, when they take your license, they staple it to a document. And it looks like his damn license looked like a cheese grater, man. It had so many staple holes in it. So Tuesday night, he came back to the book study. He came up with them broke out teeth and he said, got my license. I said, let's see him. Man, I'm telling you, it was ragged. I said, Paul, that's great. I said, Paul, do you have a car? He said, no. I said, Paul, let me ask you something. I said, when you get this car, what are you going to do with it? He said, well, I'm going to go over to the extension and get them homeless drunks and take them to meetings. This is Tuesday night. I said, Paul, you go home and ask God for a car. He said, really? I said, oh, yeah. You go tell God you need a car. He went home and he talked to his God. And on Wednesday morning, Paul went to the Howe Club in Woodstock, Georgia, on that bicycle. He walked in, he's over at the coffee station grabbing him a coffee, and a fellow walked up he hadn't seen in 15 years. Old school chum. The guy said, Paul, I didn't know you was an A&A. Paul said, I didn't know you was either. How's your mama and them? He said, you know, I got married and we got this little kid. Paul said, man, that's great. Sure is good to see you here. The guy says, Paul, do you need a car? Paul says, as a matter of fact, I do. The guy says, well, me and the wife just bought this new Honda Accord, and we've got this little Civic that I've had since new. We just had a timing belt put on it. It's a good little car, a little four-door. Would that work out for you? Paul says, yeah. How much? He says, no. He says, you can have it.
Yeah.
Paul called me up. He said, Larry, God just gave me a car. I said, I know. Tuesday night, we're at the book study, and this little four-door brown Honda Civic pulls in the parking lot, and all four doors up and look like a damn clown car, drunks falling out everywhere. And Paul came up with that raggedy tooth grin and he said, "That's my new car." I said, "That's a nice car, Paul." He says, "I named her." I said, "You did?" He said, "Yeah, that's Lois." But every time you saw Paul, he had a carload of drunks and he was taking them to meetings. He was doing God's work. He became second in that equation. But he sought through prayer and meditation, you know, to see what he could do to make God's kids more comfortable, and that's what God did for Paul.
Yep.
You know, it's funny, Paul, and this is ironic, but Paul moved from Atlanta to St. Johnsbury, Vermont, to Dr. Bob's hometown. He's still up there carrying this message. Batter up.
Two quick ones. And you see, there'll be some of y'all sitting in here and think, well, that's, you know, yeah, but that's the truth. See, this is what happened. Everybody wants to fix everything, and then I'm going to go work with drunks, and then I'm going to pray and meditate, and then I'm going to, you got the horse, that's not how it works. The book talks about, earlier in the book, it talks about gaining access to and believing in God. This is all about access. This is all about watching these miracles take place. I do this over here, and God takes care of this stuff over here. And the only people, a lot of people want to talk about this. I'll say it because old timers used to say it to me. Talking about God and experiencing God are two different things. When my insides don't match my outsides, you've got this conflict. The dishonesty around it. That's what happens to me in the 11th step. When I get quiet with God, the little dishonesties, the little chicken, you know what, dishonesties that keep floating up in my life, that's the stuff that I get to see in that quiet time with God and in meditation. And then I get to take care of it. Everybody wants to... is a great quote. I find it fascinating that most people plan their vacations better than they care... plan their vacations with better care than they plan their lives. Perhaps that's because escape is easier than change. Do you get it? I know. But in meditation, when I get quiet, then I get the sense. Am I working at the job that I really love to do? Because it's not okay if I'm not. Am I in a relationship that I want to be in? Because it's not okay if I'm not. Am I happy in the place I'm living? It's not okay if I'm not. So that's the compromise. We keep coming, well, I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do that. If you get quiet with God, God will show you what you get to do. One quick sentence and I'll let you go. There's a book out there, Wally P. out of Arizona, the guy, the little Back to Basics guy. He wrote a book called How to Listen to God. Even if you're not a fan of Back to Basics, I happen to be. But if you're not, it didn't matter. This is a book about meditation, about quiet time with God. How to Listen to God. You can just Google it and it'll go right straight to that website. And it talks about how the old timers used to get quiet with God and how they set their meditation life up. It's a pretty cool book. Thank you so much. We're going to come back in an hour.